Hi, welcome to Howling Talent, the podcast that sheds light on human and animal talents in all fields. Yvonne and I are refreshed from our hollybobs and are rearing to go. We hope you're all having a super fun summer. I'm Anna Roy.
And I'm Yvonne Dagger. Let's get howling. Today, we welcome Beth Marzo. Beth is a mom, grandmother, passionate animal advocate, and the president of Forgotten Friends, a Long Island 501c3 animal rescue. We welcome you, Beth.
Thank you very much.
Beth, when you became passionate about rescuing animals, especially dogs and cats, when was that?
I feel like helping animals is just have always been part of my life since I was very little. My earliest memories are of finding orphaned animals and my parents showing me how to take care of them. And as I got older, I would start to find cats and things that I knew how to take care of. And I just helped my neighbors that had puppies, that the mother had too many puppies. So I was always looking for a way to help both wild animals and domestic animals, any animal that needed help, because that's what gave me the most pleasure in life, truthfully.
How beautiful. Oh, wow. Thank you. But you mentioned in your biography that when you were a baby,
yes,
in order to stop you from crying, your mom would take you outside
right.
to meet the neighborhood animals, and that
right.
included birds and rabbits. What a wonderful memory of your childhood. Over the years, your family welcomed a host of pets into your home. Can you tell us a little something about what it was like growing up in a home filled with various pets?
Right. When I was very young, we lived in an apartment and all I did was ask for a pet. And they would tell me, when we get our own home, you can have an animal and we'll have a different kind of life with them. And they kept their word. We finally did get a house. We welcomed dogs and cats and rabbits and guinea pigs. But my parents taught us how to take care of animals, how to care for them. It became our responsibility. And we were told, if you don't do this right, if you don't care for them properly, you won't be able to have them. So I always made it my mission to throw myself into that and to learn. And I learned so much as a child that, you know, went right into my adulthood of just knowing how to take care of animals, that wild animals are meant to live in the wild, that, you know, cats are really not animals that are meant to live outside. They are domestic animals and they have it very hard. So that just helped me, that I became, from a young child, I learned a lot. I really grew up that way. So when I was able to have my own family, I was able to do the same for my children.
Great. So the apple didn't fall far from the tree then, obviously. You just said that you continued this love of animals when you got married and had your own children. Did they follow you in your paw steps? Are they as passionate about it as you are?
From the moment they were born, really, I tried to teach them. Young children need, you know, they learn from example. They don't they don't automatically know how to act. And I see this with people that come to adopt. Some of the children have not been taught to respect animals. And I, from the very beginning, would try to, when they were young, I'd say things like, we had a dog named Lucy. And I'd say, Lucy is lonely. Why don't you throw the ball outside? Or why don't you brush her? Or why don't you pet her? And I try to equate it to their feelings, like, you know how lonely you are when there's nobody around to play with. So I tried to teach them that animals have feelings like people. Yeah. And if everybody realized that, this world would be a kinder place. It really would.
Definitely. There's a difference between being passionate about animals and also becoming passionate about animal rescue. When did that passion start for you, the animal rescue side?
Well, rescue came when I was older, and I used to go to the neighborhood shelters and ask if I could volunteer. And at the time, they did not all allow volunteers. And you wonder, you know, and they were very large shelters, and it took actually a lot of community pressure to have them open up two volunteers.
Wow.
So I did start, that's the way I started officially walking dogs and learning about dogs that I didn't know anything about at all. And then I realized that's what opens your mind to look how many animals are homeless. This
Yeah.
is bad. You know, this has to change. And that's how you get involved, I think. You see it. You see it with your own eyes and you say, this is wrong.
You experience it.
Yes, exactly. Exactly, Anna.
So tell us about Forgotten Friends of Long Island. When, where, and why was it first established?
Well, I'm proud to say it was established in 2008. And in order to make it this long, you really have to figure a lot out. And
Yeah.
that's what it came out of. People that were volunteering at local rescues and wanting to do something on their own, to start something on their own. And that's how it really did start. And over the years, we've learned, you know, you learn from mistakes, you learn from example how to best run it. And I think a big mistake well-meaning rescues make, and we all go into it for the right reasons, is if you take on too much.
Yes.
And I've seen rescues go under and have real big problems and actually be closed. So you, as hard as it is to say no, you really do have to say, what can I do right? I can only take as many as I can probably care for. And I
Yeah.
think that's what Forgotten Friends did learn. You know, we learned that you can't be too big, that their animals are going to be neglected because of your size. I
Yeah.
always had that those words, one by one. You know, one by one, well, we get a home that opens up another, you know, another spot. And you kind of have to do that. If you don't, it just can get out of control because it is overwhelming. And
Yes.
it's sad. It's very sad.
It's very hard to say no,
Yep.
but as you say, you have
It
to.
is. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
So your passion for animals and then learning, getting involved in volunteering and learning about what rescues are like,
Right.
was part of what you initially were driven to get involved with Forgotten Friends. How did it initially happen to you with Forgotten Friends and just specifically Forgotten Friends?
Well, it's funny. At the time when Forgotten Friends was established, I was a volunteer writer for an organization called Best Friends. I think they're in Utah. It seems like a lifetime. So I guess they told me there was a new organization. Somehow I found out about Forgotten Friends starting up. So I wrote about them to get them out there. And then I was slowly involved. I just started to help with fundraisers in the beginning. You know, I didn't do a lot in the beginning other than volunteer at their fundraisers. I wasn't part of the board or anything. But as time went on, I became very involved with the dogs. I was asked to be dog coordinator, ran the dog program. And then when the president retired about, I think it was like 7 years ago now, that's when I was nominated and I accepted the position of president.
That's
Wow.
wonderful. Congratulations. And
Thank
that's
you.
wonderful, wonderful. And we are so happy to have you as president of Forgotten Friends. It's really, you know, I mean, you've done an exceptional job, really exceptional job, Beth. So it's been 7 years,
Thank you.
huh?
I think it's been about 7 years now. It's kind of a
Wow.
blur to me,
That's
but because
great.
I went from the dog, then we, and you know, it was just a lot involved, and all of a sudden, you know, and then you've learned a lot though over those years, you know, so you are able to make some changes maybe that would benefit the organization and the animals. So we're very proud. We're very proud of our work. We do have a good reputation, which you work hard for. You have to do the right thing for the animals and also for the adopters. You can't drop the ball when people have a problem. You know, you can't walk away from it. And
Right.
that's what I work very hard to do, is to stay with them in the beginning, the adjustment period, right, Yvonne? We all know about the adjustment period. And it's
Sure.
hard. The animals have been through a lot. This is another major change. You have to have people understand that it's going to take them time. They have to be patient. The animal doesn't know they're in a safe place. They don't know this is their new family. So I do work very hard to help people when they first adopt. Every adopter calls me, some more than others, but we work it out and it works out.
And what would you consider the most rewarding part of being president of Forgotten Friends?
I don't know whether it's when I get them off transport and I see how terrified they are and how needy they are and how confused they are, and being able to say to them, it's going to be okay. The worst is behind you. It's only uphill from here. That makes me happy, just to take them out of that crate and say, we're going to help you. And the other part really is when they go to the home, there's nothing more rewarding than seeing happy people with a happy animal and know that that animal is, they're safe now, they're loved now. You don't have to worry about them anymore.
Sure. And then I'm sure you have your challenges. And could you just mention over the years,
Sure.
what would you consider some of the challenges that you've had?
I guess the two biggest challenges, well, one is financial, as anybody that works with animals in any way, shape, or form. Financial, I mean, vet bills are very expensive, and anyone that has a pet knows that. And trying to manage that is something you have to, and we were able to. We're lucky now. We're in an animal hospital, so we work with a group of veterinarians that know us. It's really amazing because I can call them up and say, so and so has a little cough. Can you check, make sure she doesn't have any issues with her lungs? Does she need to go on doxy? Does she? And they can go right into our room and take the dog. So that was a big plus. But veterinary bills, the other is volunteers. It is a commitment. You have to ask people, can you commit to this? Think about it. Can you come once a week? And can you spend an hour and a half, regardless of the weather? Can you make this a commitment? And that's not really that easy. As many, there are wonderful people, and they're everywhere who really care. But it is a commitment, and finding people to fill those shifts and do the right thing is not always easy. It can be very challenging. Those are probably the two greatest challenges: getting enough volunteers to commit and coming up with the money to pay your rent and your vet bills and your food and your training when needed. You have to do whatever they need, whether
It's
it's
never ending.
medical, right? It's a lot. It's not just their health, it's their mental health. It's the animal's mental health. Do they need help with certain things? So it is a lot, and you have to be able to keep it small so you can give them 100%.
Oh,
Yeah,
that's great.
we do. That's what we do.
Very smart, very smart. It's sensible.
Well, one of the things you're an expert in is finding the right dog for the right family. I know you found Barney for Yvonne and Dennis. Speaking from experience, it can be quite a daunting job. Do you have a
Yes.
process that you follow when vetting these matches, and what is your first priority in
Yes.
finding the perfect home?
Well, Anne, what I learned very early on is the application is my personal. I don't meet people without seeing that application and without looking into it, because it's pointless. And then you have hard feelings, and you just spinning your wheels. So the application will tell me, what is this family like? How long are they out of the house? Who lives in the house? What is their experience with animals? Do they have any other pets? You need to know that to make
Of
the
course.
right match. So that is my biggest, that's number one. And then, of course, it's meeting with them, seeing how they interact. But it's the most important thing to me is the right match. People sometimes don't think things through. You have a young couple. I want that dog. He's cute. Well, yes, he is cute. But do you have the time for a puppy? What are your hours? And they'll tell me, well, I work. And I'll say, this isn't the right dog for you. You can't take on a puppy when you're working there. You can't, it's not fair to you or the dog, especially. So that's the biggest challenge. Finding, I had recently a woman who was, she was disabled. She was a lovely person. And she came for this very energetic young pit mix. And she loved him. He was cute. He was cute, and she did love him. But was that, would that have worked? Never. So then you have to try to explain to people that this isn't the right dog for you, and maybe there's another one that would be a much better match and would make everyone happier. That is, but without that, I won't do it. I
No,
do
no,
say
no.
no.
Quite
I
right.
have learned to say no, and you feel bad, but there are times you have to say no.
It's a very powerful word. Very powerful word.
Yes, it
Yeah.
really is.
So what sets Forgotten Friends apart from the many other rescues in the US? Do you know how many rescues have been placed so far, an approximate number?
I should have a number. We have to be up in thousands between the kittens and the cats and over these years. I
Yeah.
usually get, honestly, and I get sometimes four dogs a month come.
Wow. Yeah.
Sometimes month, not every month. Some months is two. It depends on the manner of, the number of adoptions. So I always tell people when you adopt, you're saving two lives, are really the dog you take and the dog I'm able to take out of one of these high-kill shelters.
Exactly.
But I think the biggest thing is we've learned to keep it small and manageable, and we've built up a good reputation, and we do have wonderful people who attend our fundraisers and help us survive financially.
That's great. That's great. We're about halfway through. Yvonne, you want to continue?
Sure, definitely. Beth, you have fosters in the southern part of the United States. Forgotten Friends of Long
Yes.
Island uses them as sort of a bridge between
Right.
you and the shelters in their areas.
Right.
How have you built that relationship with them? Do you personally visit them, or have you ever visited them before? I know that you have a relationship with them, and can you explain that to our listeners?
Yes, Yvonne. I learned from living here on Long Island, we have very large shelters. We also pay a lot of money in taxes, as you know. So our shelters are well funded. There is really no reason the animals in our shelters here shouldn't have good vet care, good care. There really is no reason. And I think they do generally work hard. Does that mean we don't have over, we have too many animals in our shelters here too. But down south, it's another issue. And when I learned about that, I started to get involved, and I found an area of Georgia who had a desperate need. They have very rural shelters. The people are poor. If you don't have enough money for yourself and your family, you don't have money. You just don't have money for shelters either. So that's how I found out about this. And then the greatest thing that happened to me is finding a woman named Chris, who's a retired nurse in that area. You know her, you know.
Yes, I
She's
do.
the woman is she's priceless. She will work with me to go to a shelter to look at a particular dog. I will say to her, I can take a big dog, Chris, because my big kennel is open. I can take a smaller dog. So she knows what we need. We'll talk about it. She goes to meet the dog.
Right.
Chris is knowledgeable enough to know, is this a dog that will work with my setting? I do have a place. It's not all fosters. We use a couple, but we also have the room with the kennels. Chris gets the dog out of the shelter. She brings the dog to her home and fosters that dog. It's priceless what she does. She learns about the dog. She also takes the dog to the vet and gets the dog spayed or neutered and shot, which saves us a fortune because things are much, much, much less expensive down south than they are in this area. So Chris is the reason. Truthfully, she's the reason we get the dogs we do. We manage to get them vetted. We manage to get them here to Long Island. And without her, it would never run as well as it does.
Have you ever gone and gone down and visited her, Beth?
I'm dying to meet her. She has a hard time leaving because she's got a house filled of fosters. She's got three of her own dogs. She has puppies that they were going to euthanize, a group of puppies, and she hears this because she lives there. And it's hard for her to say no. If we saw what she sees, I know that my house would be overrun too. So she's got about seven or nine dogs, so she doesn't get to leave. I kind of have the same problem. I've not met her, but I talk to her almost every day.
That's
That she's just
wonderful.
an amazing woman, and
Really is.
she
Really
is,
is
as
amazing.
everyone. Yep.
I know she had my Barney down there
Yes.
for months.
She,
And it, that was
yes.
That was great.
And with
that's a
Barney,
wonderful
Yvonne, you should
relationship.
know, with Barney that he was such a good dog that she kept saying to me, all right, take this one, leave Barney. You can leave Barney because he got along with everyone. She had an easy, you know, she could go out in the back and not worry. So poor Barney ended up waiting longer, but he ended up hitting the jackpot when he did come.
Oh, that's great. That's great. What a
Yeah.
great relationship you have with her. But
She's great.
Now, you know, on a little bit of another note,
Yes.
You sadly lost your beloved dog, Faith,
Yes. Right.
recently, which of course was extremely devastating to your family, which it is for every family. Through that grief, though, you've opened your home to two beautiful rescue dogs, Sophie and Dixie. And I think, well, Anna and I both think it's just wonderful. And I'm sure that I would think that Faith had played a little bit of a paw in it. So could you tell us the story about what happened and how you did receive or get Sophie and Dixie? And
yes. Well, I absolutely do believe that Faith did have a definite part in it. But the funny thing is, when we first lost Faith, we were both devastated, and I couldn't even mention the word dog to my husband. He was just that bad. He'd say to me, I can't think about another dog. So a few days, maybe a week later, I said to him, how about I just bring home a little dog and work with her, get her housebroken, you know, a nice little easy dog that we can just take care of until she gets into a home. Well, of course, that was Sophie. She was a stray that had been picked up down in Georgia. And Sophie is still with us, as you might have guessed. We couldn't let her go. We both fell in love. And then one day, there was a Louisiana is another southern, you know, another southern place that has a lot of abandoned and just overrun, really. It's terrible. But anyway, I ended up finding a dog through another rescue. They said to me, can you take one, please? I picked this dog, Dick. Well, I named her Dixie. Dixie had a very unusual story. She was in rural Louisiana and they had no shelter. There was nothing there. And a group of retirees had like a building. And they got together and they had crates. And they would come once a day. They'd take turns. They'd
Wow.
come for 4 hours a day. So those animals were in crates for 20 hours a day.
Wow.
And people say how it is sad, and it's obviously too much. But then you think about them, they're trying to do something that no one else was even willing to try. So as sad as it was for the animals in some ways, Dixie survived because of them. And that's how she came. When she came, we looked at her and we just got this overwhelming feeling that she was meant for us. And she never even got to the rescue. She came off transport and she came right to my house.
Wow.
What kind of dogs are they?
So, well, Sophie, really, it makes me laugh when I think of Sophie. She's a little black dog with little white feet. And I said, oh, she must be like a Dachshund hound mix because she has the long ears.
Right.
But I did her DNA. She's 100% beagle. I didn't even know they were black beagles. Yeah, I laughed at that. Because I'm always saying mixed breeds. And then I said 100% beagle. But she's funny. She's got the howl. She's funny.
Oh, adorable.
Yes, that's that little Sophie. And then Dixie ended up being, I did her DNA. She's boxer, terrier, something else, but they're both loves. They love each other. They've made our home happy again. And I'm grateful to have them. I think it was meant to be. And I think you're right, Yvonne. They've had a paw in that because they are the perfect fit for us. They really are.
Faith did. Yeah.
Yep.
Definitely.
She really did.
Well, as a grandmother, what advice would you give to parents and grandparents who would like to teach their children about the kindness we should all have towards animals? Because as we said at the beginning of the interview, or you said at the beginning of the interview, you know, children have to be taught
yes.
how to love animals. So what would your advice be?
Please take the time to show them. You read books to them about animals, watch movies that the good that have animals in them, where the story, it's a kind story, where some of the still traumatized by Bambi all these years later. Seven, there's a lot you can do. You can take children places where there are animals. You can. We have groups of like Girl Scouts and Scouts, different organizations. They bring children to us. I talk to them. I let them meet the dogs. I talk to them. In fact, things like we are. They have feelings. They afraid. They get sad, and you have to respect them. I think the respect has to come in. We have to respect animals. And
Definitely.
children do not know that unless they. Some parents do really just don't expose kids at all, and then they grow up people that don't even understand animals.
Sadly. So how can our listeners find you on social media?
We webpage forgottenfriendslongisland.org. That's where I put all the dogs up for adoption, all our happy tales, my favorite part. It tells you, and we also Forgotten Friends of Long Island. But the webpage really has the most information, and that people apply if they see a dog that they're interested in.
And finally, if you were an animal, what animal would you be and why? This is a question we ask all our friends who we interview.
I love all, but I think because of my big problem with dogs, I just would like to be a dog because dogs are so in tune with people, other animals. It's unfair to say just dogs, but dogs are like they are your best friend. They sad, they feel your emotions, and I always was amazed by that. A dog, if you're sad, come and do what they can to make you. I would like to be an animal that could make people feel better.
That's great. That's
Good answer.
great.
Well, Beth, thank you for chatting with us today. It's been a real pleasure to host you, and we look forward to catching up with you again very soon.
Thank you very much for having me. This has been great. A real pleasure. Thank you.
And to all our faithful listeners, remember to tune in to all our podcast episodes on howlingtalent.com, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Until next time, everyone, thank you and take care.
After recording this podcast, Beth asked us to dedicate it on her behalf to all of the dedicated and amazing volunteers of Forgotten Friends of Long Island, as well as the wonderful adopters who open their hearts and home to our little orphans. We are blessed to have you all in our lives.